From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, free to download from iTunes or Google Play, Star Wars Card Trader.
For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
All from the comfort of your mobile devices, Star Wars Card Trader.
These are the cards you're looking for.
Listening to Coffee with Kenobi, you are, with Danzy and Corey Club, the podcast you're looking for. This is. Yes.
For an entire generation, people have experienced Star Wars the only way it's been possible, on the TV screen. But if you've only seen it this way, you haven't seen it at all.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
We've been waiting for you.
The Force is strong here, even stronger than the coffee.
At last! Where have you been?
Welcome to Coffee with Kenobi. Here are your hosts, Danzy and Corey Club.
Hi, this is Jason Fry.
And Kem Romard of Star Wars The Force Awakens Incredible Cross Sections.
And you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi with Danzy
and Corey Club. This is the podcast you're looking for.
DK Publishing continues to release essential Star Wars reference books, and The Force Awakens Incredible Cross Sections continues that legacy. Written by Jason Fry and illustrated by Kemp Remillard, readers are able to experience and learn more about the world of The Force Awakens through this exciting resource for Star Wars fans, which is packed with artistic gems and compelling storytelling. Jason and Kemp are here to join us for the special book chat, and we are honored to have them on Coffee with Kenobi. Welcome, Jason and Kemp.
Hi, everyone.
Hey, how are you? It's nice to be here.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Dan.
Oh, absolutely. It's a pleasure to have you both on for a coffee chat. We are big fans of your work, as are our listeners and our readers for our blog. And we'll just jump right into it, gentlemen. Let's describe, if you would, the process of starting a book like The Force Awakens Incredible Cross Sections.
Cam, why don't you go ahead? I mean, I think this process really started with you, I think it's fair to say.
I was working on it for a bit, I think maybe you were notified at the same time, but there's a lot of stuff that goes on my end before I start meeting with Jason about it. Basically it starts with an email that terrifies you because you are anxiety ridden about completing a job like this. I've obviously never done one of these before, and I was familiar with the books. So when they first approached me, I kind of shivered in fear and then got over that. It's like any other art job. You take it one step at a time. So I have a few meetings with some of the people at Lucas. With Jonathan Rinsler was the main editor, and looked at some of the materials, and you basically just take it from there. I did some pencil sketch drawings of the various vehicles. Like, I got a list of vehicles, and I got I got as much of a rundown as I could about details of the movie to inform those sketches. So came up with a couple of poses for each one, and basically took it from there. We had a couple of meetings, and we picked some between the people at DK, my editors, Owen Bennett, David Fentzman. They pick some angles that they like, and then they run it through the people at the good people at Lucasfilm, and together they come to a decision about which angles they like better, showing off different features of the vehicle or whatever. And once those are picked, then you take it from there. And that's probably about the time that I started to get involved with Jason. So just real quick, as I'm doing this process, I'm trying to, kind of mentally note and then note in the document where I think that things might go. So there was a decent amount of labeling on my end, before I had my first meeting with Jason, to just kind of give it a purpose to where I was sticking things. And, I gotta say that was so seamless and pleasurable and great experience working with Jason on that, because we were pretty like-minded with a lot of this stuff, and I was like, hey, I'm thinking this goes here, and Jason was like, yeah, that's great, you know, here's another thing you could put there, and I was like, oh, that's great, and that's basically how it went.
Yeah, it's from my perspective, a couple things were interesting. One was that we in a way got a bit lucky that I, for various reasons, was doing a lot of traveling out to San Francisco while the book was coming together. Mm-hmm. So I had several opportunities to actually hole up with Kemp in his office. And I think that was really helpful for both of us in bringing this book together. We could have done it remotely, but it was so much simpler to be able to brainstorm by simply pointing at stuff together. Sure. In the same room. That would have been a lot harder remotely. So we were lucky there. And from my point of view, there were a couple of things. One was that I knew the book was a mix of new ships and either new models of old ships, or with the case of the Falcon, a ship we'd seen before. So in my mind, there were kind of two things going on, thinking about what I was going to do. The first was with the ships that were either new models of older things, or with the Falcon, I was thinking, you know, how are we going to approach the writing for, you know, readers who already know what a TIE fighter is, who are already familiar with the Falcon. So that was something I really had to think through. Like, what's the point of view of the writing for those spreads? And the other thing was just thinking in general was just, you know, what did we want this book to be? The other locations books are a bit different in tone. They range from, you know, there's really kind of hard sci-fi takes in Curtis Saxton's books to more kind of overall general context takes. So I really thought from the beginning, you know, what approach do I want to take? And of course, Lucasfilm had, they had their own opinions about that. So that was interesting. The final piece for me and Kemp that was interesting. It goes back to talking about how we worked in sync. I had done one of these books before. I did Clone Wars Incredible Cross Sections with Hans Jensen and Richard Chasemore, who are great. Mm-hmm. We had an interesting experience putting that book together that I don't remember if it was Hans or Richard, but I kept getting these beautiful cutaway drawings, and they weren't labeled. And I was looking at them, and I was looking at the machinery, and it was interesting because I was thinking, you know, there's obviously a mind at work that's much better than me at engineering and thinking about machines and engines and all that. And I was trying to kind of think along with it and not getting anywhere. And so I finally asked them, and it turned out that, you know, they, in a really kind way, didn't want to step on my toes, but they were kind of taking the labels off of it. And I said,
that's right.
So I was like, it's much more important for me to know what you had in mind, because then, you know, everything is going to make sense in a way that it just won't if I'm essentially reinventing it. So I said, you know, I really appreciate the gesture, but let's try it the other way. Like, tell me what you think something is. And if I don't think that works for Star Wars, we'll talk about it or figure it out or rename it, et cetera. And we all kind of said, okay. And then we went that way. And that was a good lesson when I got to this book. I was like, you know, Kemp, whatever you think something is, let's start with that. And then we'll go from there if we need to.
See,
go ahead.
I was going to say, unfortunately, I approached it from a more selfish standpoint, because I was really worried that Jason was going to reject all of my ideas, and then we're going to have where I didn't know who Jason was. So, I mean, you never know how these going to go with these professional relationships, and, you know, 99% of the time it's fine, but you never know who you're going to get. So I was like, well, maybe Jason's going to tell me it's my way or the highway and to get with the program. You know, that's the worst case scenario. It's what you fear. So I had all these labels, and I'm like, okay, you know, hopefully the guy likes my ideas and doesn't go, yeah, that's fine. But what I was really thinking was do this, right. Which was exactly the opposite. You know, I can't thank my lucky stars enough. Thank you, Jason.
Well, I think, too, the collaborative nature of this process that the two of you are sharing, it shows in the book because it is a nice melding or a blend of images and words in an incredibly poignant way. And you mentioned both of you very briefly kind of the impetus of the project, but what kind of research goes into a project of this scope and what kind of access did you have to the production of the film itself?
Do you want to go first, Jason, or should I?
No, you go ahead, because I think, as I remember, a lot of that really did start with, and you were also working kind of hand in hand with the team over there. So yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, quite a bit. I guess I'll just say that I've always been a Star Wars fan since I was a kid. So, there wasn't a curve in that regard. You know, I haven't worked on any Star Wars properties before this, but I'm a concept artist by trade in the video game industry, so pretty used to getting acclimated with people's franchises and projects pretty quickly in order to, you know, make art that hopefully fits into it. So, you know, since it was Star Wars, I was like, okay, you know, I think I've got this already, but I don't know some of the more you know, minute details, and I know that there's a lot of details. So, so I did as much research as I could on my end for, you know, some of the technical aspects. Like, I remember getting really hung up on trying to figure out just how big a Star Destroyer is and figuring out how big the Finalizer is in comparison.
yeah.
Which ended up, you know, I think I overthought it. There's a point where you definitely overthink some of this stuff. But
you also know how Star Wars fans can be, and you know how we pour through the minutia. I'm sure that adds to it as well.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's an expert.
That was ever present in my mind. And to Star Wars fans' credit, I haven't gotten any hate mail yet, so that is great. I was pleasantly surprised by that. But, you know, especially in terms of things like the Falcon, I knew that there was, you know, a lot of lore and a lot of stuff established for that already. So like, the Falcon took the most amount of research, you know, and I kept referring back to the technical diagrams that have been done already. I think it's the Hayes manual. Mm-hmm. That took the most amount of study. And I think I'll say of all the images, that one took the longest to do because it's so specific.
I think fans picture the two of you in a room with J.J. Abrams poring over the details of the design of the film. And that's probably not entirely accurate.
Well, I'll just say this. I didn't have any correspondence with J.J. Abrams, but I know he was looking at it. And I was told on many occasions that he is looking at it or is going to look at it. So that was, that was known by me. But I worked with Pablo Hidalgo a lot. Mm-hmm. Him and Phil Szyslak, Szyslak. I'm not even saying his last name. His name is, he's not Mo from The Simpsons, but, I'm going to just butcher his name, but, Zostak, he's the one that did the art of the book.
Sure.
Such a good book. Mm-hmm. Loved it. And of course Troy Alders, but I would go ask Phil most of my smallerish questions because he knew a lot of stuff and he was down the hall. And then, you know, if I had a bigger question, I would ask Pablo because he was downstairs. And I'd ask Jason. So that's how that went. Yeah.
So life is pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. A couple things from my perspective were interesting on this project is one thing, and Camp, I don't remember if this started with you or with Lucasfilm, but whoever thought it up was brilliant. One thing we did when we were looking at you know, the X-Wing and the TIE Fighter and things like that is we went back to Joe Johnston's sketches to say, you know, what did Joe Johnston say something was? Because that was really, you know, that was the way of getting closest to the spirit of the movies. And, you know, that's something I think is really something that's happening in Star Wars a lot now, is people are looking at, you know, what was the original intent? Like, what was Lucas's intent? What were the you know, the model makers and, you know, guys like McQuarrie and Ben Burtt and Joe Johnston, you know, what did they have in mind? And really getting back to that original stuff. And that was interesting. I remember being a little worried about it because I thought to myself, you know, there, if you know, Joe said something was the flux capacitor and somebody else said, you know, no, it's the, you know, it's the picnic basket, then we've got 20 years of lore that's out of sync. What do we do? And it actually didn't turn out to be a problem at all, but it let us, you know, kind of subtly relabel or move a few things. Sure. That was fun.
It'd be like someone say, no, it's 1.22 gigawatts.
Yeah. But one of the fundamental things that's just so interesting about this thing that I think a lot of fans and readers lose sight of is, you know, the truth is that books take a lot longer than films. You can do things really much more quickly digitally for the screen than you can for producing books. So, you know, one of the challenges we faced was, you know, we were getting kind of perilously close sometimes to deadlines for DK, and, you know, ships were still being worked on, and there was no way around that except to just do the best you can and, you know, and see what happens. But, your point, the Falcon was a really fun one. I mean, we knew pretty immediately that some things were going to be different. Starting, I think the first thing we noticed was Chewie's bunk and things like that. And in a way, you know, I mean, the OCD Star Wars nerd in me, who's never that deeply below the surface, was his first reaction was kind of like, oh, no. But, you know, that actually turned out to be a really good thing because it let us address stuff that we would want to address anyway, since the Falcon had obviously, there'd been some changes made, but the Falcon, oh my goodness, we could talk for an hour just about the Falcon. I mean, the fundamental irreducible thing about the Falcon is that the floor plan doesn't work with what you see in the movie. It just doesn't, because it's the floor plan of the old Space 1999 looking ship that they redid. And, you know, there's kind of no way around that.
Yeah, how they go up and down in the cannon and the physics don't seem to match up.
Oh, no, it doesn't work. It doesn't work at all. And so, you know, at a certain point, it's actually kind of healthy because, I mean, you know, goodness knows. I mean, I can't tell you how many. I mean, by now it's years I've devoted to, you know, having fun with Star Wars minutia. But, you know, the Falcon's never going to actually work completely. And, you know, that's okay. It brings you back to the place you should be, which is, you know, we're doing all this great stuff and having fun. But, I mean, look, it's a fun space fantasy movie. Just roll with it.
Right. Just, you know. Jason, you're no stranger to Star Wars and literature, clearly, and you're actively contributing to the canon on a regular basis. What does that mean for you as an author and as a Star Wars fan? And how has that impacted your writing process, if at all?
Huh, good question. I mean, as a Star Wars fan, it's a dream come true. I mean, quite literally, I kind of pinch myself every day that I get to do this. You know, in terms of contributing to the canon, I think it if you think about it that way, that's kind of a good recipe for scaring yourself. Mm-hmm. I really just try to boil it down to, I have a story to tell, and what's the story, and how can I make the story the best story it can be? And then, you know, as part of figuring out that story and figuring out the universe, in this case, the galaxy far, far away you're looking for, you know, then you think about the canon and how it fits, et cetera. But I think, you know, I think Star Wars and every intellectual property gets into trouble when those things get turned around the other way.
Well said.
You know, the world building and the continuity. I mean, goodness knows I've had tons and tons of fun with it in my life, as have many fans, but it's got to be there to support the storytelling. And when you get it the other way around, you tend to get stories that don't work. And
which is true about the cross-sections illustrations as well. I'll just add.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's there to augment the story. It's there to, you know, it's obviously like a technical diagram, but, you know, that's one of the things that we wrestled with was like, okay, you know, if we're making this such a strict scientific diagram, then it starts to break down and makes everyone heads hurt. But sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
It's absolutely true. But the, I mean, one of the things I think has been terrific at working with Lucasfilm and working with them as part of Disney has been that there really is a real emphasis on storytelling. Like the vast majority of what I wind up talking about in phone conversations or via email as books come together is about storytelling and making it work. And it's not the canon's part of that, but only to support that. And, you know, the business aspects of that, I mean, the feeling seems to be that, you know, if the storytelling is done right, that will take care of itself. And, true. You know, not just as an author, but as a Star Wars fan, I mean, that's exactly the way I'd want it. And I think it's a great way of approaching it.
And I think George Lucas would most likely say the same thing. It's about the story and how you're telling that story. And there are many tools to do that. And Kemp, certainly you have an impressive background in the world of different fictional universes. I was looking at your resume, just drooling over the things you've worked on as well. So how did your experiences with G.I. Joe and Transformers shape your work on The Force Awakens?
Well, those are interesting. I mean, those are pretty indicative of, you know, lots of other jobs I've done, but it's, you know, mostly what I was doing for them was vehicle concepting. So, you know, that would be, throwing it, a lot of the processes carried over. And then a lot of the kind of thinking carries over too, because I'm coming up with like a fictional vehicle, kind of, it has to look like it makes sense, but it has to look cool. And I also have to do it really fast. And so, you know, I have all these tricks I've kind of developed over the years working with them on, you know, making these vehicles look glamorous, for lack of a better word, and, you know, really selling it, because, you know, some of the time it was for Hasbro, but this is like pre-production work for the movies. So, you know, it's got to really sell in the one image that you're sending around. You know, you can't, you know, sometimes I would send, you know, other views and stuff, but it's not, you know, there's the sexiness to the illustrations that you have to put in order for it to, for people to stay engaged and stay interested. So, that would definitely, you know, that definitely came into play working on something like this. And then, you know, doing the insides that's like hundreds of little mini concept jobs. So, you know, just the thought process of trying to come up with what goes here and what goes here, and does this make sense? And maybe this could make sense and be fun. There's this hole here, but I can hide it by doing this and that and the other. I would say that's the biggest carryover, if that makes sense. But I've also done like character design and stuff for these clients as well. So obviously that helped, getting the characters from the film to interact with the machines in the book.
Well, and honestly, you mentioned the Falcon, and I agree. I would love to sit here for hours and talk about the Falcon, but it's almost like a character in its own right. I mean, it sure doesn't have an arc per se, although I guess you could literary it to death and try to figure that out. I think you could probably do that rather entertainingly. But there are little touches in this book, like in the beginning, the description of the vehicle technology, or you put your little clips in there about the news about Hanalei's marriage that, you know, based on the design of the Falcon, as well as the Easter eggs to Raiders of the Lost Ark, which I absolutely love. I think it's all those touches, gentlemen, that really makes this book come to life.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. No, that was part of the fun. The Falcon galley thing was interesting because that was also, that was kind of a long running good-humored fight I'd been having with other Falcon folks. Ryder Windham and the Chris Army, Chris Travis and Chris Reif, did a great job on several books doing the interior of the Falcon. But, the Falcons had so many floor plans, but one of the things that got lost was the galley. And I would, at every con, it would become like a joke. Like I would torture Chris Travis. I was like, "Where's the galley?" He'd be like, "Oh my God, leave me alone." You gotta have a galley. I mean, it makes sense. How'd they get from, how'd they get from Hoth to Bespin without a galley? So
they got beds. So they're obviously staying in the thing. Yeah,
they're eating somewhere. Otherwise, there'd be Taco Bell wrappers in the cockpit all the time.
Uh-huh. Right. And so one thing I said to Kemp at the very beginning, I was like, "We're putting in a galley." And I think he was like, "Whoa, what's the matter with this guy?" But I was insistent both because I thought it should be there, but also then as kind of a humorous dig at those three guys. But then the fact began, like, if it hadn't been there before, we had to account for it, and how could we tell it in a storytelling way? But one thing I want to jump back to real quick, which I'm going to sing Kemp's praises, which I hope he won't mind. But I mean, it's something he mentioned earlier was really a lesson for me in this book. And it's what he talks about kind of selling the image. And look at like the stormtrooper transport image in this book. Mm-hmm. And, I think there's so much detail, both in terms of the text and the illustrations in that image, that, somebody who turns the page to that, it's possible to be put off by it because it's just so much. But there's the way Kemp styled that image, the angle of it, and the motion and action of the troopers coming out of it. I mean, it's so compelling that it draws you in instead of pushing you away. Like, you immediately engage with it. You want to be part of it. And that, for me, as a guy who uses words, was a really interesting lesson in terms of thinking about stuff, and something I thought was great throughout the book.
And it's on page 8 for those of you who are listening and thumbing through the book as we speak.
Oh, shucks. Thanks, Jason.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate it. It's obviously a technical diagram, but it's Star Wars. So it's got to be actiony, and if you can show that, and there's already a precedent for that in the previous books. We've got battle scenes going on and people running off the transports and stuff. So, I really just wanted to push that. A little part of me is like, "Oh, great. This is a great excuse to draw some stormtroopers too. So why don't you guys hook me up with that reference?" And, here we go. But having that human element there, just makes all the difference in the world. If these guys were not, and that was one of the things at first is, the editors I'm working with at DK, which are awesome, by the way, but they were worried, biting off too much that I could chew. And they're like, "Well, I don't know if you don't necessarily need to put the guys in." And I was like, "Well, this is going to be boring without guys in it." Troopers.
It gives it scale.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So that was a big deal for me. I think they're just as important as the mechanical parts that are under the hood for the image.
Well, and I mentioned this in my review on the website as well. And I really believe that this book tells a story, and it's a beautiful marriage of pictures and words. And not often can that be said about something like this. Not only, gentlemen, are you adding to the canvas of Star Wars, but in my classes, when I talk about the word verisimilitude, I open this book and they thumb through it and we talk about realism in a fictional universe. And you have helped educate a lot of minds.
That's great. That's great to hear.
Plus, I think we may have sold a few books for you too, because I think they go home and buy. Nothing wrong with that. I want to look at more about the layout and the interiors of the book. And I'm curious to know what are some of the more challenging vehicles to work on. And I think I was going to ask, what are you most inspired to help create? But I think the Falcon might be the answer to that one.
Was I most inspired to help create?
Yeah. And what was maybe the most challenging?
I will say that the Falcon was, you know, was the gift that kept giving because, you know, obviously while I'm working on this book the whole time, I'm going, what am I doing? This is insane. You know, every now and then it would resurface and I'd go, I can't believe I'm working on this. And, you know, that was really big, working on the Falcon. I would turn into analytical brain, fix some things over here, do this over here, and then kind of step back and go, can't believe I'm working on the Falcon. This is insane. I can't believe it's going to be in print, you know?
Did that also make it the most challenging too?
Probably, although I will say, you know, since things are already established for the Falcon, you have that aspect as well, because I had to fill in the blanks for the other things. So, you know, the Star Destroyer was a huge question mark in my mind for a long time. I was really stressed about it. And it actually was not as painfully challenging as I thought it would be. Because of the sheer scale of it and, you know, the kind of excitement that was building, like once I was putting it together. I did want to mention really quickly, you guys talked about how the Falcon is a character by itself. And I keep making this point. It's basically like, Jerry Seinfeld's living room flying in space.
Without the Superman image once in a while.
Exactly. Without the change of furniture. Actually, it does change furniture. So they're just not eating cereal in there, I guess. But
that's in the alley. Jason put the cereal compartment.
Exactly. And that's why I put the blue milk out, you know, because I just finished that. And then rewatching the movies a lot, you know, it really drove home the, you know, this is probably a whole completely different discussion, but I mean, one of the big standout things between the original trilogy and the prequels is like original trilogy has this constant where the main characters are in the Falcon cockpit or the main hold. They're always going back to the same place. They're always like, you know, having these conferences there and, you know, the main characters all get on board at least once. And then there's just not that constant. And, you know, in those other films that, all other topics about the films aside, that's one thing that really popped out to me working on this book again, because the Falcon is such a mainstay of the series. So someone asked me what the plans for the Falcon in the future are. I have no idea, but it's hard for me to imagine this thing not being around, like Chewie not being around or something. Do you know what I mean?
Agreed. Hey, it's Dan Z.
And Corey Club.
From Coffee with Kenobi, and we are excited to let you know about the Star Wars Card Trader app from Topps.
Yeah, Dan, you remember those cards that came out in 1977, the good old days? Well, they're back again. Yeah, so it's the Star Wars Card Trader app. It has them all, as well as fantastic images from The Force Awakens, The Clone Wars, Rebels, and much more.
Absolutely. You've got your favorite characters, memorable scenes, you've got key moments. It's all there. You get credits every day for free from the app, which is available from iTunes or Google Play. Open packs from the cantina, trade with your friends, and enjoy these amazing Star Wars memories as you take your first step into a larger world.
There are so many different sets to choose from also, and there's so many great cards to chase. There's special inserts, there's rewards for completing sets and variants. It's everything you love in collecting from a galaxy far, far away.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting App from Topps.
These are the cards you're looking for.
Kim, it's interesting to hear you say that. The one I had found the most challenging was the quad hopper because that with everything else, you know, it was either, I mean, to my mind, it was either fairly straightforward what it was like. I mean, we hadn't seen a stormtrooper transport or we hadn't seen that kind of snow speeder truck really in our book and not in the movie. That happens. You know, but it was pretty clear what those were. But the quad hopper was just a total blank slate. And I remember the two of us kind of sitting there at Kemp's desk, just, I mean, it was fun, but we had no starting point. We were like, all right, what is this thing? And then we'd throw stuff out there and kind of look at each other and be like, does that make sense? And we're going to go back and forth. So that one was essentially fun, but there's no grounding. It was like, okay, let's just kind of, you know, go out on this limb and see if it breaks or if we get somewhere cool.
Yeah, so,
there's no point of reference for it.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I'm trying to remember if we even knew it gets blown up that fast or not. I mean, I think we knew that they don't go on board, but yeah, we were like, what does this thing do? I don't know, you know, come up with something. Yeah, that was a fill in the blanks. And that's kind of one that I saved for a little later. And as you can see, it's got a pretty similar bunk to the Falcon, but that was the best idea I could come up with this for this thing. I was thinking maybe try to establish some kind of a form language that's like uniquely Star Wars. So maybe these round bunks, you know, there's one round bunk manufacturer and they sell them to all the ship.
That's right.
Yeah.
They outsource.
That's exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, I want to bring up, and I see our coffees are getting low and time's running short, which is a shame because I think I would love to have shows where just the three of us talked about the different ships for an hour. I think that would be an incredibly fun experience. But I want to talk about, when I mentioned fun in Star Wars, one thing, Jason, that you have added to the Star Wars culture is the character Zare Leonis. And I love this character for a lot of reasons. One of the reasons is that his first name is pronounced exactly like my last name, so I can tease my co-host Corey that I'm part of the canon now, even though that's not true. But it's pretty rare to introduce a new character into a very well-established fictional universe and have him have an impact and have him resonate. So for you, what does Zare Leonis mean to you?
That was just a terrific experience. I mean, Zare himself was actually created by the show producers from Rebels. The basics of his backstory and his quest and his family were things that I inherited. But, you know, that said, I was able to, in the Servants of the Empire series, in those four books, I was able to define when we were starting, you know, what Zare was doing in the year before he enters the academy. And then, of course, ultimately what happens with the quest for him to find his sister. So, I mean, it was a blast. What can I say? It was a blast in so many ways. It was fun. One of the things I knew would be a big part of it was I knew in the second book in that series, Rebel in the Ranks, we were going to be potentially retelling the Rebels episode Breaking Ranks. Mm-hmm. And so that was an interesting exercise, thinking about how to do that and thinking about, you know, telling that not just with different scenes, but also from a different point of view. So that was a fun writing and storytelling exercise. And then from there, though, just the freedom to figure out what the story would be and see where that led me was really interesting. Like Mary Spanjaff was the other protagonist of that series, was entirely my character and kind of began as a foil for Zare. But in developing her, I actually got lucky in some ways because later in that series, we have stretches where Zare is essentially stuck in place storytelling wise. He's at the academy. He's waiting to go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But he kind of can't move. And because I developed Mary as this other protagonist, I was able actually to keep the narrative from getting kind of sterile and stuck because I could do things with her and then contrast, you know, what she was trying to do with what Zare was trying to do and get something interesting. So that was interesting. It was kind of an intriguing accident, if you will, that came out of the constraints of the overall story and let me do some other things. But, I mean, it was great. It was great fun and interesting to think about, how to fit those in with other stories being told. And also, you know, little things like there are loose ends in that series. You know, we don't find out what happens to some of the secondary characters. And, you know, that was something I did deliberately. I felt that
you know, it was a little too neat to kind of round off everyone's story. And sure. So experimenting with things like that. So it was a blast. I loved those characters. I miss writing them. It'd be fun to see what else they were getting up to at some point.
Well, but, I agree. I miss reading about them. I truly do. It's a lot of fun to experience those kind of characters. And I think your work, as much as anything, was our first looking at the Empire from the inside and sort of how they use their spin to help advance their mission across the galaxy.
Yeah, I mean, some of that was being done with Ray Sloan, sure. with John Jackson Miller, and I got to write a short story about Sloan, too.
That's right.
But yeah, what I found very interesting was, I mean, the Leonicists start out as Imperial supporters, and then that kind of decays over time. So looking at it from the point of Zare, who's, you know, who's a kid and who's growing up fast, but as a kid, that was an interesting way to get into that viewpoint and try to make it realistic, but without losing the fact that, you know, hey, it's Star Wars and, you know, somebody's going to pull out a blaster and race speeders and, you know, do stuff that's really fun, while exploring those things.
Right. And clearly it was a blast, and, book readers all around the world have certainly enjoyed them. And I've enjoyed very much talking to both of you gentlemen. It's been a real treat and a thrill to have you on Coffee with Kenobi. And before we let you go, we have our five questions that we ask each guest to kind of show the commonality we have as Star Wars fans and show that we're really more alike than we are different. And Jason, I'll start with you. What is your favorite Star Wars movie?
Well, I'm a 46-year-old dude, so it's The Empire Strikes Back, like everyone else.
Sure.
But yeah, it's that one. Just the storytelling, the characterization, all of it just speaks to me. I just love it.
Very good. And Kemp, what about you? Favorite Star Wars film?
Oh, you guys are going to murder me, but... you know, so I'm just young enough to not be offended by Ewoks, so... when I was growing up, I would always just fast forward to the Battle of Endor and, you know, like, oh, there's an A-Wing. Like, oh, this scene's got the most ships and there's the most fun stuff going on. So I probably watched that scene more than any of the other scenes in the movies. And growing up, I really liked Jedi because it just had the most stuff in it. Now that I'm older, you know, I totally get it. I get it. Why, you know, you would be taken aback by Ewoks and then the blatant marketing implications that they had, but they just don't affect me that way because of the nostalgia. So it's hard for me to say. Like, I'm not one of those people that, you know, they're all like all three of them in the original trilogy feel like the same movie to me. So it's hard for me to say one of those is better than the other. Sorry for the half answer, but that's it.
No, that's. I think that's good. I don't mind Ewoks either. I think they're part of the story, and I think they're fun. Kemp, we'll start with you on this second one. Who's your favorite character?
Oh, favorite character. I always relate, or I always feel bad for Captain Neeter, because he has to take over for all the dead generals, but then. You know, and he obviously doesn't want to do it, but Vader just, you know, eventually stomachs it and deals with him. Is this the right guy? Am I right about this guy?
Captain, I think you mean Piet.
Piet, yeah, Admiral Piet, yeah.
Is it Piet?
Yeah, Captain Piet swims with the fishes.
He is the one that gets killed. Okay, yeah. It's the one that where Vader finally gets bored of killing his generals. So I don't know why. I just always think of that guy. And, if you know... Obviously, I love, you know, the main characters and stuff, but my answer is going to be this obscure guy that, you know, has to shovel excrement for Vader.
That's hard to transition from. Jason, what about you?
Han Solo in the original, Obi-Wan in the prequels, and Rey in the new one.
Ooh, I like that. No one's ever segmented it like that before. Very good. Favorite line of dialogue or film moment, Jason?
Oh, it's got to be Vader to Luke in the carbon freeze chamber when they first meet. It's just chills, even the 200th time I've seen it.
Same. That's on my stars.com profile. That's what I have for my favorite moment as well. What about you, Kemp?
I would have to say when Luke is whining about not getting to go to Tassie Station, because that's the line my cousin and I would just say over and over as kids and thought of hilarious.
So, Kemp, if you collect, what is your favorite collectible that you own?
Collectibles. That's an odd one. I did end up buying some of these diecast vehicles after I started working on this book, but I don't know. I have a pretty decent book collection, but yeah, it would be the books, you know, definitely.
Very good.
Yeah.
And what about you, Jason?
I have a set of Stormtrooper armor. When I was a kid, there were three things I wanted. I wanted a T-Rex skull, I wanted Met season tickets, and I wanted a set of Stormtrooper armor. And there's like four T-Rex skulls in the whole world. That doesn't work. And I don't really have time to go to 81 Mets games a year, so that was out. But I did get the set of Stormtrooper armor, and it makes me happy
the
every
Novos?
Day. No, it actually dates back to way back to the 90s when this was sort of still underground, and someone in kind of the proto-501st in California hooked me up with it.
Beautiful. I just got the Novos armor, and it's – it's pretty great. My 2-year-old thinks it's the coolest thing that ever was. So,
well, it is. It is. Your 2-year-old is right.
That's right. It's good parenting is what it is. So, guys, what particular messages or themes about the Star Wars saga resonate or speak to you?
There's so much there. It's, you know, living up to the legacy of those who've come before and figuring out when it's not for you and good and evil and all that. But, you know, I mean, beyond all that, just, you know, go pick up a book or go to the movies, play a video game, and, you know, be rapturously entertained for a couple hours. That's the point.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an aspirational, inspirational story. You know, the hero story thing talked about a lot with Star Wars. And I think that it's not a, that's what it is. That's what it is. It's supposed to be a fun adventure that makes you feel happy, because you like the characters and you want them to succeed and you feel danger for them because it's a fun adventure. And that's what it is.
Well, gentlemen, your enthusiasm, your eloquence are very much appreciated. We'd love to have you back on Coffee with Kenobi anytime you're interested in coming back to chat with us. Where can people get in touch with the both of you, and what kind of projects are you working on that you're allowed to share with us?
I actually just got word about getting permission to talk about this, but Jason and I are both working on the locations book for episode 7.
Great.
So, look for that in October. Very excited to be working on that with Jason again. And if I didn't say so before, I just want to say, you know, it was an absolute pleasure working with Jason on this book. I love the writing that accompanies the illustrations, and you know, I'm really excited to be working with him again on this locations book. So that is what is coming up. And if you want to get in touch with me, if you're interested in my work, just go to my website. It's kempart.com. That's KEMPART.com. And my email address is on there and stuff too. So yeah, get in touch.
Yeah, I'm so excited you got. I'm so excited we're allowed to talk about that. I think that's like a first scoop. I think that's a
great
scoop for a podcast, which is
it great. Is. Yeah,
yeah, doing it's that this book, and as Kemp said, you know, I'm really happy we're working together again. I think we're a good team, and we have a lot of fun. So, more looking forward to more of it. I have some other projects, mostly I can't talk about, but weirdly, I have written a Star Wars paint by numbers book you can find on Amazon. I did not do the paint by numbers part, so which is best for all involved. If you want to find me, my Tumblr is Jason Fry's Dorkery. I don't know the URL, but you can find it. Or on Twitter, I'm Jason C. Fry. Not Jason Fry, who's he's a mobile programmer in the UK who's better looking than I am and smarter and more charming, but he's not me. So follow both of us, but I'm Jason C. Fry.
But he's not on Coffee with Kenobi, so that's
exactly.
Guys, thanks again. Thank you again for sharing your time and talents, and
thank you.
Maybe later in the year we'll have you back on to talk more about your amazing work.
Yeah, please do. Be great.
Yeah, we could talk endlessly about this stuff. So anytime. Seriously, this has been great.
Thank you both.
Chewie, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed at Coffee with Kenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
Give the evacuation code signal.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along.
From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, free to download from iTunes or Google Play, Star Wars Card Trader.
For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
All from the comfort of your mobile devices, Star Wars Card Trader.
These are the cards you're looking for.